Hello there. Today is Thursday, January the 12th. This is VOA's International Edition. I'm Lori London in Washington. Coming up, Donald Trump gives his first news conference since the election.
Do you honestly believe that Hillary would be tougher on Putin than me? Does anybody in this room really believe that? Give me a break.
Hearings for Trump's cabinet nominees continue in Washington. An unusual new trend in American divorce cases. Also ahead, Hollywood actors are coming to the defense of Meryl Streep. It's all on today's International Edition. Well, U.S. President-elect Donald Trump on Wednesday held his first news conference in nearly 6 months. Facing 250 journalists, he was hit with a deluge of questions. VOA national correspondent Jim Malone has the story.
Trump met with reporters in New York for the first time since he won the election in November. He said he accepted the conclusion of U.S. intelligence agencies that Russia was behind the computer hack attacks aimed at influencing the presidential election. But he denied unsubstantiated intelligence claims that Russia also gathered compromising personal and financial information about him and that members of his staff colluded with Russian officials during the presidential campaign.
I saw the information. I read the information outside of that meeting. It's all fake news. It's phony stuff. It didn't happen. And it was gotten by opponents of ours.
Trump said it was a disgrace that the intelligence information had been leaked, and he vowed he would work to improve what he called the current horrible relationship between the U.S. and Russia under President Barack Obama.
If Putin likes Donald Trump, guess what, folks? That's called an asset, not a liability. Now, I don't know that I'm going to get along with Vladimir Putin. I hope I do, but there's a good chance I won't.
Trump announced he would transfer control of his business empire to his sons to avoid any conflict of interest concerns, although some experts said more questions need to be answered. Trump also said he would quickly begin building a border wall with Mexico, a key campaign promise, even though U.S. taxpayers initially would bear the cost.
Mexico, in some form, and there are many different forms, will reimburse us, and they will reimburse us for the cost of the wall.
Trump also promised to have an alternative ready to replace President Obama's signature health care law at the same time as congressional Republicans moved to repeal it. And Trump said that within 2 weeks of taking office, he will nominate a Supreme Court justice to replace the late Justice Antonin Scalia, who died last year. Trump will be sworn in as the 45th U.S. president on January 20th. Jim Malone, VOA News, Washington.
Well, the news conference was dominated by issues involving Russia and the unsubstantiated reports that Jim mentioned. Joining me now for this part of the story is former CIA agent Jack Rice.
Well, it's fascinating because this isn't new information based upon all of the reports that are out there. It's been out there for some time. It's been with the senior leadership. And frankly, that this was at least pushed out, that this was out there, is not shocking. Unfortunately, in the event that you're working at this level, he is the president-elect. I think it's realistic that he needs to recognize what that means. From an intelligence perspective, do I think that an intelligence organization worldwide would try to target and manipulate him? The answer is without question. The ability of anybody worth anything to try to find anything compromising is obvious. It's something they would certainly be willing to do and try if they can. But beyond that, what I think is most interesting to many in the intelligence community seems to be his dogged support for the Russians, despite not just the allegations, but the confirmation from 17 independent intelligence organizations within the United States, as well as others outside of the United States, who said that this has happened, and his willingness to turn a blind eye to that and say, I would rather attack the intelligence organizations themselves than the Russians. That's leaving a lot of people in the Beltway scratching their heads right now.
He's also calling some of the things that are coming out fake news. Is it fake news?
No, it's not. What's actually astounding is he's not just calling this fake news. What apparently seems to be happening is he is calling fake news any news story that he either disagrees with or one that puts him in a bad light. And there's a real problem in the country when, in fact, he becomes the arbiter of what is real and what is not, what is true and what is false. Objectively true is objectively true, and we need to have that standard, and it needs to apply.
At his news conference, he said, if Putin likes Donald Trump, guess what, folks? That's called an asset, not a liability. I don't know if I'm going to get along with Vladimir Putin. I hope I do. There's a good chance that I won't. Is it an asset?
Not necessarily. I mean, that's the problem. I think that we need to recognize, and we did see some interesting statements being made by some, including actually Marco Rubio most recently, talking about this very issue. If we look at who Vladimir Putin is and some of the things that Vladimir Putin has been involved in the past, I think simply to say blindly we're going to find a way forward with him is something that needs to be looked at far more carefully than I think the president-elect has. And certainly there are those of us in the intelligence community currently and formerly who have been very concerned about that issue. And simply to look at it as he has does not mean it's necessarily a positive thing.
If he is so inclined to have a better relationship with Russia and doesn't seem to be concerned that the election was hacked, how dangerous is it for him not to take the Russians seriously as a threat?
The biggest concern is that Donald Trump needs to look at the Russians for what they are. And he needs to understand that Vladimir Putin is probably the most visionary leader on the world stage right now. He's flexing his muscles in ways we haven't seen since the Cold War. He's working his way into the Middle East. He's pushing his way west through Ukraine. He's expanding his power towards the Chinese. And the problem is to simply sit back and say, oh, I'm sure it's going to work out fine, without looking at what the Russians are doing realistically, is maybe the biggest concern that we have, because their capability is expanding. And when theirs expands, ours contracts.
Because of these unproven claims that Russia may have compromising information on Donald Trump, is he right in that it shouldn't have been leaked? And if so, was it leaked by someone in intelligence?
It's an interesting question to figure out who would have leaked this, because apparently this information was relatively widespread. This information was not just in the hands of a couple of people. And the problem that comes with that is it's not necessarily just in the hands of a few intelligence people. There could be politicals that are out there. There could be others who are out there that want this information out. So it's frustrating to look at Donald Trump targeting CNN and saying they're fake news as a result of simply saying, hey, there's stories out there about this. That's what the media does. The media puts out information, at least what they can verify. They don't need to verify things that aren't. But if it's out there, they have the right to at least talk about it. Just because Donald Trump doesn't like something doesn't mean it's fake. And I think at some point we need to come to an understanding that news is news. It's got to be accurate. If Donald Trump doesn't like it, that doesn't redefine accurate to fake. These issues should be investigated. He may not like it. This is not about him. This is about the exposure of American citizens by a foreign power. And we need to look at what that is.
All right. We appreciate your perspective and your expertise. Attorney, investigator, media analyst, and former CIA agent, Jack Rice. Thanks for your time. Well, Donald Trump's choice for Secretary of State, Rex Tillerson, the former ExxonMobil CEO, denied Wednesday that he'd pressured the U.S. to avoid sanctioning Russia over foreign policy disputes. In his opening statement, Tillerson sought to clarify many positions regarding Russia.
Where cooperation with Russia based on common interest is possible, such as reducing the global threat of terrorism, we ought to explore these options. Where important differences remain, we should be steadfast in defending the interest of America and her allies. Russia must know that we will be accountable to our commitments and those of our allies, and that Russia must be held to account for its actions.
Well, there is evidence that Exxon was active in seeking to protect its interests in Russia. Congressional records show that as a bill to impose sanctions on Russia over its annexation of Ukraine's Crimea region moved through Congress in 2014, Exxon sought to influence the outcome. Meanwhile, in the second day of confirmation hearings for Trump's nominee for attorney general, black lawmakers testified that Jeff Sessions has at times shown hostility towards civil rights. Democratic Senator Cory Booker testified against Sessions, saying he has not demonstrated a commitment to a central requisite of the job, which he said is to aggressively pursue the congressional mandate of civil and equal rights for all U.S. citizens.
In fact, at numerous times in his career, he has demonstrated a hostility towards these convictions and has worked to frustrate attempts to advance these ideals.
Sessions on Tuesday said he is totally committed to maintaining the freedom and equality of all U.S. citizens. He has solid support from the Senate's Republican majority and from some Democrats and is expected to easily win confirmation. Here are some of the stories we're following at VOANews.com. The Mexican president again rules out paying for a wall on the U.S. border. VW pleads guilty in U.S. emissions scandal. Six employees indicted. The Taliban releases video of foreign hostages. Relatives of the slain Charleston churchgoers confront the gunman for the last time. Find expanded coverage of these stories and more at VOANews.com and on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. There are more than 800,000 divorces every year in the United States, and a new trend is emerging when it comes to domestic violence laws originally designed to protect women. They're now being used by men. Joining me now is California family law specialist Peter Walzer. Thanks for being with us. So are you seeing a lot of men filing domestic violence charges against their wives?
What we're seeing is probably 40 to 60% ratio of men to women bringing domestic violence claims, either as a preemptive strike or as a counter action to a woman's domestic violence claims. And domestic violence is not always a hitting, a slapping. It can be stalking, following somebody. It can be threats. It could be harassment. It could be invading somebody's computer. And in some states, it could even be forms of emotional abuse. And you really can't have a relationship without both parties engaging in this. And sometimes it's the first party to get the judge's attention in a court or call the police that will be the one who has the upper hand in a domestic violence action.
So there isn't any rhyme or reason like the judges will always side with the women or the judges are now starting to really take the men seriously?
Well, unfortunately, the way I see it, there is some gender bias in this area. But, I mean, judges are under a lot of pressure to overcome that bias. And when they're challenged by attorneys and parties in domestic violence proceedings on the issue of bias, they are hard-pressed to make an order for one party but not an order for the other party because it's so clear. It's hard to overcome, but we're seeing courts more fair-handed if one person can show a bruise or a scratch. Generally, that's going to mean finding of domestic violence. And just to be clear, there's civil family law domestic violence and there's criminal domestic violence. Criminal domestic violence are when it's reported to the police and the prosecutor brings the criminal complaint. In a family law action, there can be domestic violence restraining orders, but they're put into a national police computer system, which is pulled up in every police car in the state. And those laws are also impinge on the amount of support you pay, child and spousal support. In some states, it even affects the property division. And it definitely is a factor in making custody determinations. So whether it's civil or criminal domestic violence, they have serious consequences. And both men and women and same-sex couples are using these domestic violence laws to get an upper hand in divorce, paternity, custody proceedings.
Do you expect to see more and more of this?
It's du jour. Every day we see more and more of this. And we're getting calls from women who are being charged with domestic violence and saying, what do we do? And I simply raised my hand when he tried to hit me. He blocked the door and I tried to get past. He was the first person to call the police. Or the police decided to believe him rather than me. I was emotional. I was crying. He's a doctor, a lawyer, or other professional, and smooth-talked the police.
Do you think some of this, though, is just about husbands trying to manipulate the laws?
I think a lot of it is, especially in the kind of cases we handle, where people have money and they're sophisticated. Sometimes it's even a setup. They create an incident, and then they call the police, and it's entirely set up. It's happening all across the country. You call a lawyer in any state, they're going to tell you they're seeing more and more of this.
All right, that's family law. Attorney Peter Walzer, we appreciate your time. Thanks for being with us. You're listening to International Edition on VOA.
Jazz America.
This is Russ Davis, and on my program Jazz America, I carry on the tradition begun decades ago by the great Willis Conover by exploring the wonders of a century of jazz history. I'll cover it all from Dixieland to swing to bebop to modal, free jazz, fusion, world jazz, contemporary, and beyond. Plus, you'll hear the words of the artists themselves as they tell their incredible stories. Join me for Jazz America, Saturdays and Sundays at 13 hours Universal Time, online at voanews.com and the Voice of America.
News happens around the clock, and VOA brings you the latest at the top of each hour.
This is Joe Palca.
I'm Victor Beatty.
Francis Alonso.
Tune in for a summary of the news at the top of each hour, around the clock on The Voice of America. Hourly newscasts on the radio and on the internet at voanews.com. VOA, a leader in news coverage for over 70 years.
VOA's International Edition continues. Turning to Hollywood news, we are joined by content editor with website Rare.us, Nicole Moschella. So actress Meryl Streep certainly made news this week after using a big acceptance speech at the Golden Globe Awards to get political. And, you know, she didn't mention President-elect Donald Trump by name, but it seemed pretty clear she was talking about him, and it definitely was critical. Trump responded in a way that he often does in a tweet saying Streep is very overrated as an actress. But it does sound like some Hollywood heavyweights now, Nicole, are taking up for her.
George Clooney has come out in defense of Meryl Streep. He was at a press conference for a new documentary that he's working on about Syrian refugee volunteers who work with Syrian refugees on Netflix. And he came out in her defense and shared some of his own opinions about Donald Trump. He said, quote, "I did not vote for him, I don't support him, and I don't think he was the right choice." And he joins a long list of celebrities who have come out in the days since Meryl Streep made her acceptance speech and called Donald Trump out. Ben Affleck made a comment about it on Jimmy Kimmel Live. He said, "Donald Trump picked the wrong actress to call overrated. She's one of the greatest actresses of our time." Charlie Sheen was spotted by TMZ, and he commented, and he did not have very nice things to say about people who have criticized her. So she is receiving a lot of support from Hollywood at this time.
And then we've got an update on the Kim Kardashian robbery from Paris when she had some valuables stolen. It was a pretty traumatic event, and you've got an update on that?
Yes. So one of the things that was stolen, there was upwards of $10 million worth of jewelry stolen from that room. The two thieves that robbed her at gunpoint also got away with her purse and cell phones and some cash. But one of the things that went missing was a $4 million, I think like 10-carat diamond engagement ring that Kanye West had given her. And this diamond ring that Kanye West gave to her, and it could wind up back on her finger. A lot of news outlets are reporting that maybe these two brothers that have been arrested, there's 17 people that have been arrested in total in connection to possibly this crime. And two brothers they're looking at specifically are big in the diamond trade. So there is whispers that this diamond could be somewhere in Antwerp, which is a big diamond trading capital. I don't know. I personally think at this point it probably has been smashed to smithereens and it's a whole bunch of little diamonds now, but it very well may wind up back on her hand if they find who done it.
Wow, that would be fascinating. And then last but not least, we've got some new details about the divorce of one of Hollywood's couples that we thought would be together a long time, Brad Pitt and Angelina Jolie.
Yeah, so they've been separated now since September, and they have this ongoing custody battle over their six children, and it's been kind of nasty. But one thing that they did agree on, and they said that they released a statement saying they are a united front, and they have both agreed to keep this divorce confidential. As many details that they can keep private as possible. They are using a private judge now, and they're not going to let a lot of information out. Angelina Jolie is hell-bent about getting full custody of those six children, and she only wants to allow Brad Pitt visitation, and he has fought back on that. He really wants joint custody and to co-parent with her, but something tells me she may get her way. She seems like that kind of woman to me.
All right. Content editor with website rare.us, Nicole Michella, thanks for being with us. Time now to take a look at what's been trending on social media with G. Abby Lee. Hey, G, what's happening?
Hi, Lori. Trending Tuesday night was the younger first daughter, Sasha Obama. She missed her father's farewell address and Twitter went berserk looking for reasons.
I was wondering myself.
Yeah, it was kind of visible, right, that she wasn't there?
Of course.
It turns out she stayed home in D.C. studying for finals as opposed to flying to Chicago. People are tweeting she must be suffering from a major case of FOMO right now, and that also stands for fear of missing out. A little millennial jargon right there. During his address, Mr. Obama said, of all that he has done in life, he is most proud to be their dad.
I know. That was a really sweet moment for sure. And you can find more tweets about the address by using the hashtag ObamaFarewell. There's lots of them out there. What else is trending?
The next item is something that I think you will feel passionate about. Actress Jane Fonda is in Canada to speak out against the environmental impact of the Alberta oil sands. She's widely known for her environmental activism works, and after flying over the oil sands, she said it made her body ache to watch it.
Yeah, she's been very active. She's used her voice as a well-known celebrity to really try to help make a difference.
That's right.
For sure. So moving on to another celebrity, we were hearing maybe for all the wrong reasons, buzz about comedian Steve Harvey.
Yes, for not a very positive reason. As you know, he has a self-titled show, and during the latest episode, he suggested Asian men are not attractive. Ironically, one of his tweets from this week says, unfortunately, on your journey to success, you will run into naysayers. Now, to that tweet, a lot of people are leaving comments saying that the naysayers are all there because you have said negative things about an entire race. Under that tweet, many are writing how disappointed they are in the celebrity, and some are taking a more positive attitude toward the incident, offering to help him and give him a list of Asian men they find attractive. Lori?
All right. Thanks so much, G. You can follow her at G. Abby Lee. Americans who've tried to get tickets to the hit Broadway musical Hamilton, they are rare and expensive, but how about owning a piece of hair from one of the actual founding father, or maybe one of his love letters to his wife? Well, as David Byrd tells us, Sotheby's in New York is auctioning memorabilia from the real Alexander Hamilton this month.
What's your name, man?
Alexander Hamilton.
A million things I haven't done, but just you wait.
Lin-Manuel Miranda's hip-hop telling of Alexander Hamilton's life and death has ignited Broadway. Hamilton won 11 Tony Awards last year, including Best Musical, Best Score, and Best Lead Actor in a Musical. The show has also inspired interest in all things Hamilton. January 18th, Sotheby's in New York will auction several letters and other memorabilia from the Hamilton estate. Selby Kiefer is an international specialist of books and manuscripts at Sotheby's.
So there are love letters with Elizabeth, his fiancée, eventually his wife. There's one of his Pacificus papers, his most important political writing other than the Federalist. None of his manuscripts for the Federalist survive. This is it.
Dozens of letters from Alexander Hamilton will go on the auction block. They include both his political and personal writings. Selby Kiefer says the manuscripts are from a direct descendant of Hamilton's.
Eliza divided up the material at her death among her children. This is a group of material that was given to her oldest surviving son, James A. Alexander, and it stayed in his family until now.
Javier Munoz, who plays Hamilton in the Broadway production, says reading the letters gives him an insight into the character's mind.
It's about the detail. It's about the words being chosen. It's about the phrasing. It's about who he's writing to, the context of the letter itself. And then looking at his own notation and what, how his mind worked.
Munoz says the personal letters, especially between Hamilton and his oldest son, give an intimate look at the founding father's relationships and how he thought.
It's sort of like walking into someone's apartment and looking at their desk where they work. And that's so revealing about how their mind works. It's looking at this material and it's just another gleam into him and his workings.
Bidders will even be able to buy a lock of Alexander Hamilton's hair taken after his fatal duel with former Vice President Aaron Burr in 1804, along with a letter of presentation from his wife Eliza. Selby Kiefer says the popularity of the play has driven up the expected profits from the auction.
The estimates, I have to be frank, are probably a little bit higher than they would have been 5 years ago, or if the musical hadn't happened. But I think I've left room that if we do attract some new bidders and our traditional bidders are re-energized, even those estimates could be broken by the bidding.
The auction, Alexander Hamilton, an important family archive of letters and manuscripts, starts at 18 hours Universal Time on January 18th. In Washington, I'm David Byrd.
You've been listening to International Edition. That does it for today's show. But you can find us anytime at voanews.com. Thank you so much for joining us, and thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Jimmy Cook. I'm Lori London in Washington. Have a great day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States condemns in the strongest possible terms the recent horrific vehicular attack by a terrorist in Jerusalem. 4 soldiers were killed, including 1 U.S. citizen, and 17 wounded when a flatbed truck driven by an Arab terrorist rammed into a group of soldiers adjacent to the Arman Hanatziv promenade in southeastern Jerusalem on January 8th. 3 female soldiers and 1 male soldier were declared dead at the scene. According to the Israeli Defense Forces, an additional 2 cadets were seriously wounded, and 15 other officers and cadets sustained less severe wounds. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, who visited the scene with Defense Minister Avigdor Lieberman shortly after the attack, said the identity of the terrorist was known. Later, he was identified as Fadi al-Qanbar from a nearby Jerusalem neighborhood. "We are fighting this plague and will defeat it. We will overcome this terrorism just as we overcame other attacks," said Prime Minister Netanyahu. Speaking to reporters following the attack, Jerusalem Mayor Nir Barkat said, "To our dismay, there is no limit to the cruelty of the terrorists, who are willing to use any means possible to murder Jews and to damage the routine of life in Israel's capital. There is absolutely no justification for these brutal and senseless attacks," said U.S. Deputy State Department spokesperson Mark Toner. "We condemn the glorification of terrorism now or at any time, and call on all to send a clear message that terrorism must never be tolerated. Our thoughts and prayers are with the families of the 4 Israeli soldiers who were killed."
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at voanews.com/editorials.
is for, what's